Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Saturday morning Bible study. We're recording today from the North Star Cottage, and we're so glad you could join us this morning with a topic of Spirit of God. And our moderator is Thomas from New York.
O love divine, whose constant beam shines on the eyes that will not see, and waits to bless us while we dream. Nor leavest us though we turn from thee. No bounds, nor climb, nor creed thou knowest. Wide is our need, thy favors fall. The white wings of the Holy Ghost stoop unseen o'er the heads of all. O truth, which sage and prophet saw, long sought without, but found within, the rule of love beyond all law, the life o'ercoming death and sin. O shine on us with light which glowed upon the waiting shepherd's way, who saw the darkness overflowed with tides of everlasting day. So this is hymn 229, and the words were written by John Greenleaf Whittier.
Yeah, beautiful.
It's called Constancy.
Yes. Yeah.
Who knew Mrs. Eddy well? We had some very good experiences with Mrs. Eddy that her life changed for him.
Yes.
So he had a very dear affection for her and deep in his heart.
And for the science.
Yeah.
Because he was healed.
He was healed at his home in Amesbury of incipient pulmonary consumption, whatever that is. So
I have a lot to share.
Okay, good.
I would like to start with the story of John Greenleaf Whittier, so that we can really, truly appreciate that healing in the end that Mrs. Eddy bestowed upon him. So he started out in a one-room schoolhouse up in that northern area. I should have gotten the location. But anyways, Haverhill, Massachusetts. He was a Quaker. He lived on a farm. He had a couple of sisters and a brother. And he was schooled in a one-room schoolhouse, but largely self-taught. He did get one year at a high school that he had to work so he could pay for it. I mentioned this because, you know, what the beauty of what he did, and he did, you know, supposedly did not have any education according to the human sense. But he became a journalist, but he was a huge abolitionist. I did not know this about him. He was quite remarkable. He became a journalist at first, and then he wrote for something called the Pennsylvania Freeman. And in the publishing building he was in Philadelphia, it was burned down. And he disguised himself and got in to recover some of the papers that were in there before they were destroyed. And he was very active, I believe, from 1833 all his life. But around 1833 to 42, he became more political. And he started a group called the Liberty Party. He wanted to see the laws changed so that they could protect the people and get them out of slavery. And he was stoned in Concord for this. And in 1835, he became a politician in Massachusetts. And he was stoned right there on the road because he was supporting this abolitionist movement. And he even spoke at meetings supporting the freedom. And he later joined the Republican Party to support Abraham Lincoln and his mission there
to end slavery.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to put it. Thank you. And then later, he became more focused on religious and moral. And this is the part that I thought was very beautiful. That's 1866 to 92 when he passed away. But he was a companion with his mother at the end, and she passed away in 1857. And then he lived with his sister. He never married, and they were very close, and she passed in 1867. I'm just mentioning all this because he had a lot that caring when Mrs. Eddy healed him.
Yes.
And he was very close to her. I'm sure he missed her terribly, his sister. And that's when he became ill. And if you go to Long Year, they tell the story. And this was given from Mrs. Eddy to Calvin Fry. She dictated this. And apparently she was living with Sarah Bagley at the time in Ansbury, where Whittier also lived. And she wanted Mrs. Eddy, her new tenant, to come see him. You know, don't you want to come see him? Because he was very famous at the time. And Mrs. Eddy responded, "No, I have no particular desire to see him." Then Sarah told her, "You must see him soon, for he is ill and probably will not live long." Hearing these words, Mary didn't hesitate. "Well," said I, "if that is his condition, I will go and see him and help him." And so then they walked down the street, and she sat quietly next to him, and he was healed and lived for 24 years after that, and wrote some of his most religious and moral poems. And I think that's very profound. Also, I wanted to mention, which was interesting, when he was 20 years her senior, so when he was involved in the Massachusetts politics and was being maligned, she mentions that in her writings about the people who were fighting to end slavery. And I'm sure she knew of him and was referring to some of his work and the people he's working with. So I thought, you know, she just sat there and brought that love in and just healed all this that he was carrying, because it really, this abolitionism really broke his heart also. And he had apparently a lost love earlier. So I just think it's so beautiful. And then he lived 24 years and wrote some of his best.
That is beautiful.
Yeah,
You know, that's why he could write those beautiful hymns and poems. I think he's one of my favorite poets. It's so spiritual. Yeah. Every one of them. I'm not as familiar with this one, but it's beautiful. I mean, gosh, it's lovely. Thank you. We should have a place on our website, biographies, and put that one, you know, with a little bit. Anyone else who has biographies, we have some on, you know, Carpenter and some of our early workers.
You know, there are a couple of books written about healings that Mary Baker Eddy did, right? Do you think that this is in one of those books?
It most certainly is. Yes, it is. It's in the biography of Mrs. Eddy. And to give you a few more details about this visit in Amesbury with Sarah Bagley, it was a warm day, but John Greenleaf Whittier was sitting there shivering with a fire. And Sarah Bagley, "Why are you having a fire on a warm day like today?" And then Mrs. Eddy asked, "Can I treat you?" And she got somewhat of an acknowledgement. But, you know, the condition in his body improved. His blood circulation started improving. Mm-hmm. He became more animate. And he didn't need the fire, not even on that warm day, which it was. The shivering stopped. He was healed.
Yes, he could barely speak when she got there, and he couldn't stop coughing at all.
Yeah.
Was lifted.
Yes.
It's beautiful.
It's a beautiful story.
She knew many, you know, at that time, there were all these very profound writers, especially in the New England area, and she knew them. Benjamin's here, so. That was beautiful. Thank you both. And I'd like to share something Kiri sent about the hymn that applies it to Eli. It's interesting. I'll read the excerpt she gave us. The article is called "Responsibilities of the Christian Scientist" by William Syrian Bridge. Hi, Benjamin. "Many who have accepted Christian Science in principle will be able to recall the sensation of peace and joy which entered into their consciousness when the truth of Mrs. Eddy's teaching was first revealed to them. And before a deeper study of her writings, combined with experience of the obstacles encountered in the endeavor to give practical effect to this teaching, it brought it home to them that the way of God is not along the primrose path of aliens. This is not to imply that the peace and joy thus acquired are of necessity transitory, but for indeed they become the permanent possession of the true worker of Christian Science, and that in an ever-increasing degree. On the other hand, however, it is as little open to doubt that this exalted sense of uplift soon departs from those who, after having been shown the way, hesitate or delay to follow it, so that there are not a few who have had a painful personal experience. Leprosy, the poet Whittier, O love divine, whose constant beam shines on the eyes that will not see, and waits to bless us when we dream, thou leavest us when we turn from thee. However well-intentioned and honestly desirous to walk aright an individual may be, he must be prepared, especially at the outset, to do battle with those insidious forms of error which would prevent his progress, either by superinducing mental physical lethargy or by encouraging him to be contented with his present state. And then it goes into bringing about how Eli, you know, he was doing so well, but then he obviously fell into something, lethargy, I believe, and he didn't discipline his sons. They were defiling the temple, and well, anyway, you can read the story, but I thought it was well how she brought it. Eli saw it, but lost it, is what Carrie said. It's a sombering warning that we don't, you see.
I think in the Bible, yes, in the Bible it says here, where God is saying the message is, I have commanded him, wherefore kick ye at my sacrifice and mine offering, which I have commanded in my habitation, and honorest thy sons above me.
Oh.
It says there that they challenged that.
It's an interesting comment about Eli, because he had a position of a judge, which is a very position of servants. And yet, Bert was more in protecting his sons, including their wrongdoing, than in serving the Lord for the benefit of the public.
Yes.
He was told that his house would be empty.
Yes, Samuel had to tell him that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anybody else?
Well, I love this hymn, as all of the hymns that you pick out, Tom, thank you. But just think about this, this divine love, it shines a constant beam, even though those refuse to see it. Still, that constant beam continues. Is there any doubt in anybody's mind that our God is love, and not only that, but his way is the only way, even though we may be looking in other paths? That constant beam is still there to guide us back to the one true way. What a wonderful God we have.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thou never departest from us.
Never, no.
So Linda was the one who selected the hymn this week, and when she sent it to me, I just immediately loved it. So we've had a great discussion about John Greenleaf Whittier. We can thank Linda, and I'm just like pleased as punch that we included the hymn this week. So
yeah, thank you.
And it feels like we should have something on our website. Someone did mention that earlier, but if we don't, that would be awesome.
Yeah, and actually, I'm thinking of it, all these, we've done the biographies of a lot of these hymn writers, right? So we can put all those under the biography section. If anyone else has any ideas, but certainly that.
Okay, so yeah, our topic...
excuse me.
Well, we did on Violet Hay and Randall...
Yeah. Yeah, Don Randall Dunn.
Dunn, yes.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, Tom.
Okay. Well, this is an aside, but you know, this has been a learning experience for me reading these hymns and trying to learn something about the writer. And it's just really awesome what is in our hymnal that I never knew was there, let's say. So.
Exactly.
So our topic this week is Spirit, which is of God. And that, of course, comes from our lesson this week. And our text that we're reading is 1 Samuel chapter 3, the entire chapter. So our first question is, what do we know about Eli?
Well, he was a priest in Shiloh, or in a judge, and he was the one that told Hannah that God would grant her request for a child, and then she promised her child to serve God, which was Samuel. And that was the one thing that came to mind, aside from when he kind of took a stumble and took care of his sons instead of taking care of the things of God.
Yeah, this was at a time when Israel did not have a king. They had judges instead, and they were supposed to enforce divine law. So it was a very sacred position. He was, you know, one of the last of the judges.
But he has an understanding of God. If you listen to the conversation he had with, there was someone he knew he was speaking to him. So he must have had a encounter with God.
Well, he was
before
a priest.
Yeah.
Describing that time, it was really bad. And in a way, all fingers kind of pointed to Eli. They said, you know, there was no vision. Things had gotten so bad, people couldn't hear God anymore. There were only a very few, like Hannah, who heard God and brought forth Samuel. But things had gotten so bad, and it even in you know what, that you've got questions, it says apparently there was some lack of zeal on Eli's part. Some part of Eli's heart was with his sons and not with the Lord. You know, and people compromise about things. Well, maybe he thought it wasn't so bad compared to everything else going on. Mm-hmm. You know, you just get lackadaisical. You lose your standard, your high standard, when this sort of thing happens. I didn't realize how bad things had gotten at that time.
Yeah, the Philistines were all around, causing all kinds of trouble.
Yes.
And I'd just like to add that this is why when Jesus came around, he said, you know, that we cannot deal with these human senses of family. And that was really a strike because Eli's weakness or his Achilles heel was his belief in family. And that really took him down.
Thank you. Yeah, his personal sense.
This happened to Abraham as well, you know, where we start to let human family or nation or whatever take over. We have to say, what do you want, God? And then we have to go forward.
Yeah.
Happened to Job too.
Exactly. I'm gonna say, yeah, Job too. He let his sons do things he shouldn't have done.
Well, thank God it doesn't happen to any of us, right?
No. Well,
so easy to sit and talk about it, but harder to do sometimes. Well, and in another article, this was a really good article for anyone who wants us, the Samuel story that Carrie sent. It's by the Reverend Mason. And he said that when only a youth, Samuel was called to be a prophet and to succeed Eli, whose sense of divine illumination had nearly gone out. At the time of Samuel's call, the Hebrews had reached the lowest stage of apostasy, which is abandoned device, lost to principle, shameless in wickedness. This condition is represented in Eli and his wicked offspring. Samuel was the son of Hannah and Elkanah and was a child of prayer, consecrated to God from his birth, and at an early stage taken to Shiloh. And he became acknowledged as the best judge. He lifted the Hebrews from idolatry and subsequently freed them from the Philistine yoke. But Eli was asleep. And, you know, even in the end, how he died, it said he fell off a chair and he was so heavy that he broke his neck. So that doesn't show a good picture, does it?
What happened was that they were at war with the Philistines, and the two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, thought they would go fight the Philistines, and they took the Ark of the Covenant with them, thinking like, just because we got the Ark of the Covenant with us, there's no way we could fail.
Yep.
Well, that didn't work. The Philistines, two sons, stole the Ark of the Covenant, and the two messengers came back and told Eli what had happened. Guess what? Your sons died. And because that was the thing that hit him more than anything else, he fell off his chair, broke his neck, and died on the very same day that his two sons died. Which goes to show where his heart was set.
Yes. Mm-hmm. This is why we do what we do, because you can get very sloppy in your work or get lazy or just self-content,
self-personal,
self-mesmerized. You know, it's out there waiting for you unless you keep striving for the high goal. As Gary said, we all look at ourselves.
I have a question. I was wondering when I was reading about all of this, was this the last time we heard about where the Ark was? But did we hear about it later with David, the Ark of the Covenant? Mm-hmm. I didn't know it was a So this is interesting.
Yeah,
you're right. David went in with his army against the Philistines and recovered the Ark of the Covenant.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Bruce. Bruce is our historian.
Wasn't there a part two, though? Their God kept falling down in front of it, and they wanted to get rid of the Ark, the Philistines,
There's something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Not that good of a historian.
They were suffering because they...
Right.
LDR.
And it also gets to show that God is not a respecter of man. When I mean man, I mean like man as a material person and everything that comes from it. God doesn't care if you have been my priest for years. He doesn't care about what you're doing now. Are you serving me or you're not? And in the case of Eli, who started well, and he eventually, he wasn't a respecter of man. Like Eli, he started well, no doubt, being the priest of God. Well, eventually he become more personal, consumed with his family and the rest of that. And that brought his downfall. Of course, God was preparing for it because he raised up Samuel to guide his people. But God is always willing to give that responsibility to the next person. And he doesn't care about your personality anymore unless you are serving him. But if you are not willing to serve him, that responsibility will be passed on to whoever is willing to serve him. And he carried on his work from there. And you see it happened in few years later, it happened to Saul. And that was
same
period of time what happened with Saul. He started well as a king because the judges were failing and there was none left. And they said they want a king. And God raised up Saul. Then at the end of Saul, we saw how it ended. Then God raised up David. take on that responsibility. And, because even on today's day, we all have responsibility to do. If you're willing to do it, God will be with us. But if you're not, God will raise up Samuel and Saul. Yes. Samuel and David, even our generation, to do the work.
Yes. Yeah, it's why we work with the rule for motives and acts every day. We should. Neither animosity nor mere personal attachment should impel the motives and acts of the members of the Mother Church. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? And Mrs. Eddy, you know, all her
her family ties were kind of broken.
Yeah, all her family ties were broken and taken from her so she could do this work. I'm sure she's richly rewarded now, as was Christ Jesus. Bruce?
Well, actually, Benjamin touched on something very important. We all have a responsibility, and that responsibility is to have God, of course. But if we fail in our responsibility, someone else will come in and
do a better job.
Do a better job. Because, you know, the way of the Lord can't be avoided.
Absolutely.
It has to be complied with.
Yeah, it's a golden thread that gets handed. And in that, it's a movie or doc, what's it? The House of David, some of you have watched. And the portrayal, the first season we really enjoyed. Portrayal of Samuel in that is quite good, remarkable what he did. He went around with that staff of his and was flying around doing great things when he was in his prime, and certainly picking David and watching out for him.
Yeah, he had humor and fierceness.
Yeah, humor and fierceness. He's portrayed well in that.
I want to say about Eli that I always kind of like to look at the Bible studies. Like, what is it that can help us in our lives, how we conduct ourselves or make decisions and so forth? So it seems to me that Eli, you know, made a choice. His two sons were really immoral, exceedingly. But he didn't stop them. He didn't like severely discipline them. So it was kind of like he was making a choice of his sons over God, because it really was against God in a way to allow his sons to do what they did.
No kidding.
Yeah, most definitely. That was just one of his downfalls.
Mm-hmm. And, but then could you have prevented them from doing those things? Because sometimes a parent tries, but the son will do whatever they want to. We can't say that he didn't do anything. Doubt it.
Maybe remove them from their position.
Yeah. Probably nothing removing them, but you're right. And what Tom said too, they were exceedingly, you know, they were having sex in the temple and other mm-hmm. things. Horrible stuff. It's, you know, we have a kind and gracious God. It takes a lot before he says enough already. Bruce?
But you know something, when it comes to your own children, sometimes the kindest thing you can do for them is let them take the consequences of their actions and stop trying to protect them. Mm-hmm.
Very true. So yeah, they often, all got killed.
Often if you protect kids when they're falling, they'll just try to fall from higher. That's not good.
Yeah.
And that goes to what got away on Wednesday. It's opposite of what Eli did in the case of Job, who recognized that the weakness mm-hmm. in his life, and he makes sacrifices. He makes some steps. In his case, he makes sacrifices of forgiveness on behalf of his children, knowing very well that even though I'm not watching them every move they make, they might have done something wrong or something like that. So when what came upon his children, Bible said, you have got ready, they were drinking and celebrating. It doesn't sound a good picture to me, but what are they doing there? And what happened to them? They invited whatever happened to them. But that how would I put it? Job Hans is clean from that because he has done his job as a father by strengthening them up and putting up on their behalf, making sacrifices on their behalf, and it didn't affect Job. As you can see in that story, he was the only one alive in the family while everybody else perished.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So by his own life,
yes,
by strengthening his children, whether they listen to him or not, it's not at least one the right, but he didn't do it. He allowed them, gave them the free will to continue to corrupt the house of God. Mm-hmm. Consequently, not just his children paid it. Like Bruce said, they died the same day.
And even the mm-hmm. of Israel, right?
Yeah.
A lot of, and it turned out Samuel had naughty children too. So.
What I'm saying that we also have when it comes to our children, to strengthen them, advise them. Whether they're going to do what we told them, it's up to them, but we have to do something. At least you speak up.
Yes. Lawrence?
No, I mean, these were not small children, so it's kind of, maybe it was too late then.
Mm-hmm. I know. No, she had. It's truth to this too, mm-hmm. you know. It's not so easy when they're all grown up, and you know they're bigger than you are.
To try to teach them, mm-hmm.
but well, we'll learn. We'll learn what we can.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Nobody bigger than God.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And the whole point of all of this is to turn everyone to God.
Yeah.
To their sense of conscience, their sense of higher sense of morality that's not badly influenced by selfish wishes.
And Mrs. Eddy says in Science and Health, the offspring of heavenly minded parents inherit more intellect, better balanced minds, and sounder constitutions. And you can see with Hannah and her prayer, so sincere and beautiful, she brought forth Samuel and she gave Samuel to the Lord. And in another interesting article from Carrie, it talks about, and you can't help but notice this when you read the Bible, that, what's the name of it? Oh, the Progressive Revelation of the Immaculate Concept by Susan Harper Mims. And think about it. First you have Melchizedek, who was without father and without mother. Then you have Abraham, who they said could not have any children, right? Sarah was too old. Mm-hmm. And yet, through a prayer and spiritualization of thought, eventually they did. And then it mentions Manoah, who was the mother of Samson. And this story I'm not that familiar with, but it says it's a really beautiful story about how she prayed. And the angel of the Lord appeared because she was supposedly barren. And she gave birth to Samson, who did mighty things. He had his falling away, but he did mighty things for the Israels. And then, of course, Hannah. And then after that, Isaiah prophesying a virgin that will conceive and bear a son. And then we have the Gabriel. Oh, then we have John, the birth of John. Also, parents who were too old to give birth. And then Mary and Jesus. But the point being here that it was a spiritualization of thought. These pregnancies did not come easy in all these cases. And there was a lot of prayer. In those days, they didn't have whatever it's called today. They intravenous. Yeah, whatever. If you couldn't have a child, you had to pray about it. And in the cases, it all led to something. You know, they were all specially designated children who grew up, of course, especially designated adults, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, definitely. It reminds me of what Ms. Day says in Science and Health. To begin rightly is to end rightly.
Yeah.
And we all began rightly.
And that is why, you know, when you have a child, if you're going to have a child, it's very important to have a lot of prayer. Not just after the person's pregnant, in the conception itself. There should be a lot of dedicated prayer about it. It's not just something you hi-ho-hum and do. There should be much prayer about it for all these reasons.
The pregnancy and the delivery of the child goes
well. Goes well, yes. Yeah, so.
It invokes the law of God, which is good.
Yes.
Good and natural.
And eventually there will be no longer this kind of reproduction. And even in this, you know, it's always spiritually conceived and brought forth, Mrs. Eddy says. Mrs. Evans, she had a lot of baby cases. And she taught a lot about this, looking up things in concordance and all of that. I was so sorry because I left my booklet in California. I didn't pack it by mistake. But anyway, she gave us a lot, and it's in my heart and mind about it. But it's important because I think in many ways it's a lost art. Most people go to doctors now, even scientists.
That's right. I was wondering about childbirth and the motive why people have children. And I was wondering especially about Hannah and why after giving birth, she gives the child away. And reading this story again now, I thought the motive to have a child is to serve God and not to have a child for oneself. And that it is what she did. She gave the child to God very close up with God. And under his wing, and it's not about us, I think.
Oh, you're
absolutely to have children.
Absolutely, that's the only reason.
Yeah. And that.
Well, thank you for that. That was very insightful. So thank you for that.
Yes.
And that gets us to the next question.
Exactly. You read my mind. We started answering the second question with that. So why did God speak to Samuel?
Well, God sent a message to Israel because things were really bad in Israel at the time. Hence, someone like Eli could be a priest and do such a lousy job. And Samuel was the one person in all of Israel who was best prepared to hear the message. And he was the best person largely because his mother was godly and gave him to God.
And we know God speaks to everyone. It's just that Samuel was actually listening.
Yeah, awareness.
And Hannah.
Remember, Mrs. Evans told us that the tallest peak is the first one to see the morning light. So this gives some indication about, or shall we say, the ethical height of Samuel at that time.
And you know, I guess to some extent it explains why some people are more spiritually minded than others. But it does not have to be, because I know many of you came from what would seem terrible beginnings. And look at you now, Jeremy being one of them, and many others of you. So it doesn't necessarily have to be. As we've seen, some of the ones, like, they've had so-called good parents, but they haven't turned out so well. So I guess the thing is to, as Misha Ila said, you give the child to God and lose your personal sense of him as best as possible. Florence?
Well, all that we do for the glory of God, so that is it's important to remember that.
Thank you.
Well, and Sam, you know, I mean, it's the humble heart who hears God. That's why Mrs. Eddy says humility is lens and prism, right?
Yeah.
And Samuel was young enough that he was totally humble. He hadn't been, you know, washed yet by society. And he was, and so he was in a position to where he could listen and he could be trained properly. And he was.
Yeah, and he seemed very obedient. You know, wasn't he obedient to Eli? Before he knew the Lord, he was obedient to Eli.
And I'm going to tell him how choosing you. With that, we're so sure you are the choosing one. And even though, as a little child, he hasn't realized that yet, but God is telling him, you are the one that will carry this torch. And at the same time, he was sending a message to someone, perhaps choosing your replacement in case you don't know. That's like the case of Saul and David. When God chose David, he made that known to Saul. Your replacement has been chosen already. And God usually don't change his mind like that.
Yeah, in those cases.
Yeah, in the case of Samuel, God is telling him, you are the one I have chosen. Because he means that God already seen that Samuel is failing him.
This was interesting, too, Harry sent that. Said all, it talks about four men, Cain, Samson, Eli, and Saul, were made aware of their life, of their lifetime, of their folly and their failure. Yeah. It is sometimes thought that outward tokens of success blind the victim of temptation to his own failure and keep the world also ignorant of what he truly is. Well, that's sure true. That's why you can't judge anyone. Can't judge anyone anyway, but
no, you can't.
But you know, people can seem, we know how many, oh, it looks like they have such a great marriage, and then the next thing you know, they're not married anymore. So you can't judge things your outward appearance, I guess, right?
And you also can't judge who may be struggling and having, yes, all kinds of failures or whatever, because when they get their act cleaned up, they have the capacity to do some really special things.
Thank you.
And wasn't that judgment due, it would be very harmful. So yes, please know.
Yeah. And oftentimes it's those who have struggled painfully who do the best work eventually.
Most definitely. And, you know, there's
Learned along the way. They learn along the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because in the struggle, grow and change and mature. Well, if you're just floating along pleasantly, you don't. And there's a watching point Mrs. Evans used to refer us to. It was about younger students who would criticize a so-called advanced students or students who'd been around a while who had a lot of struggles. And it was a critical thought and they had no business doing it. Kind of goes back to what Bruce says. Walk a mile in a person's shoes. Just because you've been in science a long time doesn't mean life is problem free, right?
May not.
Well, and the thing is that this is a really important point. People who are most useful to God are going to get attacked by the devil and by those who don't want to face up to their shortcomings. It's the people who are most, I mean, look at Mrs. Betty's life. Look at Susan's life.
Yeah.
They were the highest
constant
living lives on the planet. And look at how they were attacked. So when someone is attacked, that's a sign that they're doing really good, usually. Usually. When someone's popular and getting, you know, getting all kinds of ad, you kind of have to wonder what's going on there.
Yeah, and there's,
So if you're
growing in science and things seem to get more difficult, well, handle animal magnetism
and keep going.
And keep going. Keep exactly going.
Yeah, there's a saying, I'm paraphrasing, but it's like, it's not so much what happens to you, but what you do with it. Like thank how you respond or react. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. There's nothing more disturbing than a sightline criticizer.
Yeah.
Sightline.
Very easy. Throw stones and darts at people.
Not sightline. Mm-hmm. means social media, guys, easy for people to see behind criticize people.
Thank you.
Themselves not being alone.
Thank you. That's why they stay off it.
Theodore Roosevelt wrote that thing, the arena. People casting stones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So on Science and Health, page 505, which is, this comes direct from our lesson this week, it says, spirit imparts the understanding which uplifts consciousness and leads into all truth. And it goes on. It's very good. Now, this spirit imparting understanding is to everyone. It's not selective, right? But right. What's the important thing is that we're listening. And so this question about why did, God speak to Samuel is because I think that Samuel was someone who listened. And if you listen, then that's where you hear the understanding.
Thank you. Exactly. They go together because God speaks to all of us. So that makes a point for not being chosen. It's those who are listening. They seem to be chosen, but they're actually the ones listening. As Bruce said, the highest peak.
Yeah, the highest peak is the first one to catch the morning beams of the sun. Mrs. Evans taught us that.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what he said, be good at sun. Still small voice.
Mm-hmm.
Constantly speaking, still.
Yeah.
And speak in a gentle way. You shall not listen, you're not going to hear it. If you're listening to a lot of noise, you miss it.
Exactly.
Someone certainly wants into noises around.
So makes me
wonder. Yeah, it makes me wonder. Those two sons of Eli, where were they living in the same house?
I mean, I can't imagine. I know, with all that going on.
They weren't good.
And in the Golden Text this week, it says that God made you to hear His voice so that He could instruct you. So without excuse, you were made to hear God's voice.
Yep.
Got that? You were made to do it. God made you that way. So if you say you can't hear it, well, then you got to go inside and ask yourself why. Because you were made so He could instruct you. And you're actually one with Him. You're hearing Him all the time.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things that's behind Samuel's warning to Israel to not have a king. You can't be leaning on other people. Wanting someone else to lead you, the it shall not have any other gods before me. That's quite a responsibility. That means you got to turn to this one that for whom you were made to listen to and be instructed by.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an individual responsibility.
Thank you.
One of the most interesting things I found, and it's in, I wanted to back up Bruce, what he said, it's Samuel 8. Where the elders wanted to have a king. And Samuel felt rejected. And God says to him, they didn't reject you, they rejected me.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're, you'd say lazy, but they wanted somebody to act quickly. Whereas when you depend on God, sometimes you had to pray, but they had just the judges. And they would pray and wait, and then they would win the battles and so forth. So I thought that was fascinating.
Thank you. And every time we want a big government or a big organization to take care of us, we are choosing a king over God, because that's what ends up happening. The less outward government we can have, the better off it is, because then you can hear God and be an individual, and then we'll all get along together when we're listening to the Father.
Well, that's a good point, because our founding fathers knew that really, really well, which is why they established a government that was intended to be really small and not interfere in people's lives like it does today.
Yeah, Ms. Say, man is self-governed only when he is guided rightly and governed by his maker, who might be love.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. So question number three, and this is a little bit of just Bible facts, but this is good that we want to learn about the Bible. So Samuel was established as a prophet of the Lord. Describe one thing that Samuel did as a prophet.
He found David, the king, the new king that the people wanted to have. And he listened to God to find him because he didn't, as somebody said already, he didn't want, thought that it was the right thing to have a king. But he listened to God and finally found David.
Yeah, he was there when the era of the kings was established. And he did the same thing with Saul. God told him,
it was Saul.
But he was there as the prophet and the primary advisor, most of the time anyway, to the first two kings.
And they were willing to listen.
Because they knew that God spoke to him. And they trusted that most of the
to a degree.
To a degree.
You know, Saul, when he went so far badly awry, and this is after Samuel had already left us, Saul engaged this divining person to call Samuel back.
Samuel, we miss you.
Yeah, Samuel, we miss you. But Samuel said, "Wait, you didn't listen to me when I was with you. What do you want me to tell you now?"
Right. He, among all the prophets, he seemed to be one of the few that has a distinctive understanding of God as not God in the material form, but God in a spiritual form, a spirit. I think based on how he was raised, because as a little child, he started conversing with God. He found that God is not somebody you worship in the material form, as Jesus did, is somebody you worship in spirit. Because in the case of Saul, when Saul was making all these, he goes and disobeys God, doesn't follow God's instruction. He think just by throwing a little bit of sacrifices here, that would please God. If I kill a couple of sheep, think as if God cared about any of those. And Samuel told him, no. To worship God and serve, we have to be obedient to him. Obedience is better than sacrifice. And he's the only prophet who sees that better than everybody else, of course. Jesus Christ came in later on and sees it the same way, that obedient, obeying God's law is better than all these material sacrifices.
Yeah.
That part of him I like so much.
Yeah. Thank God we don't do that. We're animals.
I know. And people say, a Catholic, not Catholic individual, but Catholic as a religion still teach that, because they tell their followers, if you have seen somebody Catholic, you can go out there, commit all kinds of sins as you want, live the life as you want, come back and talk to the priest. That wipes out all your sins. It doesn't work that way. That's like in the days of sin. You can do all kinds of things you want. Just go and kill a couple of sheep. God forgive you. Yeah. No, that's not how it works. It has to be individual responsibility. Taking care of owning your own sin and asking God for forgiveness, which Saul did not do. Never actually done that. Today, Catholic, they don't preach it. They tell people, you can live all you want, go in that small boot and spit out.
Confess your sins. Anybody, Tom, you want
to? Well, I think we should move to question four. So I just wanted to cover a couple of things Samuel did so we realize that he was a prophet, right? So that's good. So question four, what is the spirit which is of God? Now, this comes from 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 12, which you can get the answer from that, interestingly. And then also we can look to Science and Health, page 89, lines 20 to 21, or any other thoughts you might have about the spirit which is of God.
Someone want to read the Bible, 1 Corinthians?
Okay, I'll go ahead. So this is
not the spirit of the world.
We get a volunteer?
Yeah. Okay. 1 Corinthians 2:12 says, "Now we have received not the spirit of the world, but the spirit which is of God, that we might know the things that are freely given to us of God, which things also we speak, not in the words which man's wisdom teaches, but which the Holy Ghost teaches, comparing spiritual things with spiritual." So the spirit which is of God is our consciousness, our true consciousness, which is God. And it's not the false beliefs that are thrown at us by the world, so-called, by materialism. It is the truth that we perceive through spiritual sense.
It's very important to exercise that spiritual sense. That's our safety and our security. But you know how the tendency is of humankind. They hear something that somebody else says, and they repeat it. They get real good at repeating what they've been told. Come on. Let's be really good at reflecting what God is telling us. More discipline.
I have a quote in the Bible that I found. It's Psalm 99, and it's about Samuel. It's reflect first to him. It starts with, "The Lord reigneth. Exalt ye the Lord our God and worship at his footstool." Moses and Aaron among his priests, and Samuel among them that called upon his name. They called upon the Lord, and he answered them. End quote.
Thank you. Anyone else who wants to add anything?
Well, I want to add that in that verse, verse 12, where it says that these things are, quote, freely given to us of God. So if you remember before I mentioned about spirit imparts the understanding, et cetera, and that the spirit is imparting this understanding, right? And that it's really up to us to listen. So I think this freely given, right? Spirit imparts the understanding which uplifts consciousness and leads into all truth. See, that is freely given to all of us.
It is. But Mrs. Eddy warns us, doesn't she? She says to stand porter at the door of thought.
Yeah, it's kind of like spiritual sense versus intellectualism, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or versus materialism, yeah. Or versus, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. all kinds of other isms.
All theology.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Coming from the world instead of from God.
Yeah, yes. And how do we know what's what? You turn to your Bible and science and health.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know what's what, you turn there and start there and work out from there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and very simply, the test is ask God, God, is this from you? Or is it from, you know, someone who doesn't have my best interest at heart?
But it's the constant practice of listening to God, you know, taking time to listen to God. You know, mm-hmm. that brings, you know, that increases that awareness of your spiritual sense. Really.
Thank you.
Yep.
And Jesus prayed to the Father before he left, not to take the disciples out of the world, but to keep them from the evil.
Thank you. It's a good point. I'm going to read the Science and Health, someone.
spirit God is heard when the senses are silent.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
That's what I say. It's not easy to do, but that if you practice it enough, it becomes easier and easier.
Thank you. And you have opportunities all day to do it. Every little thing, what you wear, where you're going, what you eat, if you water your plants or not.
And how much.
all things, because God knows the answer. So work at it all day long asking him. And then rejoice when you hear him and be grateful for it and realize that's the presence and power of God with you. It's not just some coincidence or some thing. It's something wonderful. Mm-hmm. Who else didn't speak that would like to? About anything.
Well, thank you, Tom.
Well, I really like this Bible study. I mean, I'm sorry, I did write it, but like, I just said I do like it. I mean, our second question, why did God speak to Samuel? You know, this is kind of like, well, because he listened, but is this exclusive to Samuel? Right? Was because he was special? He was special, but, you know, was it not available to us? But then I read where it's freely given to all of us, right? So it's there for us, and we have to learn how to listen. And I'm not going to tell you how to do that because that's something I need to learn more about. But you can see the concept, right? God is imparting understanding to all of us. It's freely given to us, and we just have to turn to God and listen to him and
listen with
life from there.
The listening ear.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, very important. I think that today's Bible study was very joyful. I really liked the way so many people jumped in and participated and provided information, a lot of great insights. So, I thought it was a very joyful Bible study today. So, thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.